Earth. Even the word sounded strange to me now, unfamiliar. How long had I been gone? How long had I been back? Did it matter? I tried to find the rhythm of the world where I used to live. I followed the current. I was silent, attentive. I made a conscious effort to smile, nod, stand, and perform the millions of gestures that constitute life on Earth. I studied these gestures until they became reflexes again. But I was haunted by the idea that I remembered her wrong, and somehow I was wrong about everything.
Previews of coming attractions.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome back to Sunday Night in Cinema 3. New in theaters this week is yet another action film starring The Rock called Rampage. I think it's loosely based on the old video game where giant creatures, kaiju basically, destroy an American city. I suspect I'll be seeing this with my son in a few weeks if it's still playing, and I'm fine with that. If The Rock is in a movie, it's usually a good time. I can't say I have the same optimism for a dead teenager film called Truth or Dare. Sorry, Blumhouse's Truth or Dare. Please, accept no substitutes for your lazy, predictable CGI jump scares. Insist on Blumhouse's. Finally, for the kids, there's something called Sergeant Stubby, an American Hero, an animated picture about a heroic bull terrier who was the mascot of the 26th Yankee Division in World War I. The voice cast includes Gerard Depardieu and Helena Bonham Carter. I'll be amazed if I ever watch this. Meanwhile, in limited release, we have a Korean horror film called Gonjam, Haunted Asylum, a horror film with Liv Tyler called Wildling, a horror film with Tara Reid called Bus Party to Hell, a horror movie starring Shia LaBeouf called Borg vs. McEnroe, about the classic tennis confrontation, and a horror film starring Anya Taylor-Joy called Marrowbone. Anya Taylor-Joy is also in an upcoming horror film that I'm looking forward to called The New Mutants. And finally, on home video, some good-looking stuff this week, including Molly's Game and the adaptation of Dirk Backdurf's excellent autobiographical graphic novel, My Friend Dahmer. Also available this week are the Oscar-nominated The Greatest Showman, All the Money in the World, and The Phantom Thread, plus Taraji P. Henderson in the kind of Foxy Brown-looking Proud Mary. I would like to see pretty much all of those movies at some point, except maybe The Phantom Thread, because I can't stand the combination of P.T. Anderson and Daniel Day-Lewis, but if you're into it, that's cool for you.
Previously on Sunday Night in Cinema 3.
So, 10 years ago in Cinema 3, I saw a film called Leatherheads, starring George Clooney and last week's box office champ, John Krasinski, as a pair of guys at the dawn of what would become American football, when the only thing they had for head protection was a new kind of leather helmet. It's a bit depressing to consider how the game has evolved, but the danger of serious head injury has not changed. In fact, it's probably a lot worse now, given the average size and power of today's football players. In any case, Clooney plays a star of that time's version of the NFL, a much less popular league back then, who tries to convince Krasinski, a college football star, to come and play with his team. There is, of course, a romantic subplot between Clooney and Renee Zellweger, who we are supposed to believe is a young reporter. I hear you out there saying, hold up, what if there was a romantic triangle between Clooney, Zellweger, and Krasinski, just like in that one sports movie I like, Bull Durham? You're in luck, my friend, because I am guessing that George Clooney likes that movie too, so when he decided to direct and star in this film, he had a template to work from, and there's nothing wrong with that. Leatherheads was an agreeable time passer of a film in 2008, and it pretty much still is. I don't care about American football at all. As a sport, I find it very dull, and I find most sports films very dull, but with the right scripts, like in the TV series Friday Night Lights, it can make almost anything compelling. So, if you do like American football, or sports movies, or both, or if you like any of the stars, I think you'd probably enjoy this one. But if you don't, then I think you're fine if you skip it.
Intermission.
So this week I'm looking at movies starring George Clooney and John Krasinski, both actors who started in television, moved on to acting in films, and are now successful directors as well. One of the old clichés about Hollywood is that every star actually wants to direct, and I suppose the root of that comes from the idea that stars are egomaniacs, so directing is the logical endpoint for such a person. In reality, I think there are many paths for directors to be successful, but the ones we tend to lionize are the ones who cultivate a public persona, in addition to the quality of their work, which of course can rise and fall depending on a number of factors that they don't necessarily have control over. We think of the noble struggle of Orson Welles, or the abusive perfectionism of Hitchcock or Kubrick. I was thinking about another great director this week, called Preston Sturges, who made classics like The Lady Eve with Barbara Stanwyck and The Miracle of Morgan's Creek with Betty Hutton. He also wrote a number of films in the 30s before turning to directing in the 40s. My favorite film of his is called Sullivan's Travels, which, despite being a well-loved and critically regarded film, I think is still not very well known. It's the story of a successful director, played by Joel McRae, who's tired of making light entertainments. He wants to make a serious dramatic picture called O Brother, Where Art Thou? That will make people think and change the world. In the interest of research, he decides to shed his Hollywood trappings and journey through America on his wits alone, without his fame and fortune, to reconnect him with the regular people. Needless to say, things don't go quite as planned, and he learns that sometimes making people laugh is a greater gift than we realize, even if those who hand out Academy Awards don't get it. Flash forward several decades, and rising film heartthrob George Clooney is looking for a different kind of script to complement his resume of action films. He has his first collaboration with Steven Soderbergh in 1998 on the film Out of Sight, adapting Elmore Leonard, and he'll go on to work with Soderbergh regularly in the decades that follow. But he also works with Joel and Ethan Coen. In fact, I'll be talking about one of their films together later this year on the podcast. But their film together before that is a zany period piece about three men who escape a prison chain gang. It's called O Brother, Where Art Thou? After the imaginary film in Sullivan's Travels, and it references Sullivan's Travels repeatedly. So if you decide to skip Leatherheads, I wouldn't really blame you, but I hope you'll check out both Sullivan's Travels and O Brother, Where Art Thou?
And now, our feature presentation.
Alright, and this week's selection from my DVD collection is actually one of my favorite films of the last 20 years or so. It's Steven Soderbergh's 2002 remake of Solaris, which Russian director Andrei Tarkovsky originally adapted from Polish author Stanislaw Lem's influential science fiction novel. Fun fact, by the way, the late Philip K. Dick once tried to report Stanislaw Lem to the CIA as a spy. Anyway, I get that the Tarkovsky version is the one that everyone is supposed to love. I've seen it a couple of times, and I must admit, I don't get the appeal. I suppose it's partly just a cultural difference. I studied Russian for a couple of years in college. I do have some understanding of their tropes and their cultural background noise, but man, I just find the Tarkovsky version so dull and overlong, especially compared to the tense and beautifully photographed Soderbergh version. If you're listening to this show, you're in one of four situations. You have seen both versions, and you either agree or disagree with what I just said. You've only seen the Tarkovsky version, in which case I strongly recommend you watch the remake. Or you've only seen the remake, in which case I do recommend you check out the original if you get a chance, because it's Tarkovsky, and that's always worth it at least once. Or finally, you haven't seen either one, in which case I recommend you watch the remake for sure. And if you're also interested in Russian film or classic science fiction films, then sure, check out the Tarkovsky film too. Okay, so now that we've got that all sorted out. Like Leatherhead, Solaris stars George Clooney, this time as a psychologist who's asked to evaluate the mental health of the crew of a space station orbiting the mysterious planet called Solaris. The crew are behaving erratically, apparently hallucinating encounters with their loved ones from back on Earth. When Clooney arrives at the station, he soon starts to have his own disturbing experiences, and Soderbergh alternates between those and Clooney's memories of the rise and fall of his marriage to a woman played by Natasha McElhone. The cast also includes Viola Davis and the character actor Jeremy Davies, who you may recall as the physicist from Lost. The story of this remake is an interesting example of how sometimes casts and directors can change on a film, and it turns out to be the best thing for it. The remake of Solaris was developed by James Cameron's company in the early 2000s, but he was unable to direct. Soderbergh submitted a script to Cameron, who loved it, and told Soderbergh he should direct it. Soderbergh had it originally intended for Daniel Day-Lewis to play the lead, but he was unavailable during that window of time. Since George Clooney was a partner with Soderbergh in his production company, Clooney was given a copy of the script and told Soderbergh that he'd like to do it. The rest is history. Soderbergh not only wrote and directed it, he was also his own cinematographer and editor under pseudonyms, and he does a wonderful job as both. The other element of this film that really stands out for me is the score by Cliff Martinez, which perfectly suits the haunting and otherworldly story of a man trying to forgive himself for his past, while trying to understand what the alien planet wants from the humans that are in orbit around it. It's a score that I listen to frequently, especially when I'm writing or drawing. The film itself I probably watch every other year or so, just to enjoy its beauty and its theme of redemption. I recommend it most highly.
Roll the credits.
Sunday Night in Cinema 3 is produced, written, and recorded by Scott Marshall, that's me, with much appreciated help from Nicole Slip and the nice people at the Central Branch of the Halifax Public Library. Sunday Night in Cinema 3 is copyright 2018 by Scott Marshall, all rights reserved. Please send your feedback, questions, or concerns to Sunday Night in Cinema 3, that's the number 3, not the written out word 3, at gmail.com or through social media. Visit SundayNightInCinema3.com for our links to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and whatever other social media platforms I can stand to deal with. This podcast does not have any advertisements because I figure we all have enough advertising in our lives, but it does have some modest expenses. So if you'd like to support the podcast, you can check out my Patreon at patreon.com/ScottMarshall. That's 2 T's, 2 L's. For as low as $1 a month, you will have exclusive benefits, including outtakes and bonus material from the podcast, a heads up on what's coming up from me, and access to other exclusive digital content that I haven't even thought of yet. The Patreon also has a community forum where you can talk to each other or ask me questions, and if you subscribe for $5 a month or more, you will receive regular packages of physical stuff from me in the mail, including comics, art prints, stickers, game prototypes, and whatever else I can think of to send. Whatever you do, thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. See you next Sunday in Cinema 3.
Good night.